Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Locatora Radio. Locatora Radio. Locatora Radio. Mommies of Myth and Bullshit. A radiophonic novella.
Locatora Radio, hosted by
Mala Muñoz
and Diosa Femme.
Hello, welcome back to Locatora Radio. This is Diosa Femme.
And this is Mala Muñoz. Thank you for tuning in once again to Brown Girl Hour.
Yes, Locatora Radio is where we celebrate the brilliance and legacies of women and femmes of color. Thanks so much for tuning in yet again. This is Capítulo 10.
Yay!
Capítulo 10!
It's a big deal.
It's a big deal. The name of this capítulo is Para Luchar Hay Que Chismear, and we have a really special guest, which we'll be introducing in a little bit.
We're so excited.
We're so excited, especially because, I don't know, I'm sure some of you have noticed that we probably haven't released an episode in about a month now. We have had
a journey.
Everything the universe has been working against us, sound, studio things,
equipment,
retrograde
technology.
Is now, you know,
retrograde.
In process.
Yes.
Yes. So thank you so much for being patient, for tuning in.
We'll tell you more about it. We'll tell you more about the journey to get here. But it's a mini milestone for us. And we have some other milestones that we've experienced recently, some really exciting announcements.
Yes. So recently, we were asked to be a part of a Facebook Live series with Remezcla. So they had a storytelling Facebook Live series, and they asked Locatora to be a part of it. And Mala represented us. So do you want to talk a little bit about the video experience?
It was so much fun. So, like, Remezcla and the Philadelphia Latino Film Festival and Latino Victory, they came together to put together like a series of talks. And this was the final installment of their Facebook Live talks. And it was all about like storytelling as resistance and as a tool for organizing. So it was really fun. And I Skyped in and we talked about storytelling as resistance. So shout out to Remezcla and to the Philadelphia Film Festival, to Latino Victory, to Andrea and everybody who was a part of it. It was really fun. It was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wasn't able to be a part of it because I had a meeting for my day job that I could not miss. And what I like, shout out to Mala because she really represented the both of us. She included me in the dialogue. We were able to go over the questions beforehand and she made sure that my voice was still heard. So shout out to you. That was really amazing.
I try, girl.
Yes. And then because of that, there was actually a write-up feature article on Remezcla. So shout out to Yara Simon for that.
For writing it.
For writing it. Yeah. So it's around. It's on Remezcla. It's on Facebook.
Yes.
Our Instagram, you know, so if you want to check that out, it's available.
Yes, and then we had a feature in Latina Mag online. Our friend Raquel Richard, she's an editor at Latina Mag, and so she wrote this really amazing, beautiful feature about the podcast, about the program. So check it out. It's online.
It's amazing. I just get so excited and happy when I think about it, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. Raquel's doing a lot of really great work for Latinas, so shout out to you, girl. And then we have a conference coming up. We will be participating in a conference at Pasadena City College, April 22nd, called Adelante Mujer.
Mm-hmm.
It is for young girls, young Latinas, and young women of color. We're really excited to be presenting FemTech. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
We're going to present our FemTech workshop, but this time we're going to be talking a lot more about like other creators,
yes,
other thinkers, other activists, like for example, Kim Milan.
Yes.
Her work on fem science. There's a FemTech blog and website that's all about women femmes using technology for social change. And La Loba Loca, for example, and how she talks about Abuelita knowledge as technology. So we're going to incorporate those elements of like all the femmes who are like talking about fem science, fem tech.
Definitely. I think it's so important for us as creators to always acknowledge the folks that have, especially the femmes and women of color that have come before us, that have carved space, paved the way, all that kind of beautiful stuff that femmes do. So shout out to all of them. And we're really excited. It'll be our second conference that we're presenting at.
Yes, we love conferences.
Yeah, so thank you to the organizers that are bringing us out. And then last night we went to a really dope art show at the Mexican consulate.
Yeah, over here in LA, and it was a really cool space.
It was.
And I've driven by there so many times, and I had no idea that that was the consulate.
What show was it?
The Peralta Project show.
Yes.
The Rolos and Icons.
Yes.
It was fun. Tona performed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shout out to the artist Tony Peralta. The show is amazing. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that I have the Celia Cruz con Rolos that was gifted to me about a year ago. So it was really nice to see like the whole series, especially La Lupe, since we'll be talking about La Lupe in the next few weeks.
Oh, yes. So exciting. Yes, it just all like ties in.
It ties together, which I love. And then finally, shout out. Congratulations. Mala has her very first article on the Huffington Post blog site.
Yay, I'm so excited.
Can you talk about it?
Yeah, so actually shout outs to Jessica and to Tanisha Love Ramirez, who's one of the editors at the Huffington Post, who extended, gave me the opportunity to write for the blog. So my first blog entry I posted today, and it's a post that is dedicated to sexual assault survivors, and I discuss Denim Day, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which actually is very relevant to this episode because we talk about survivors and safety planning, or
Absolutely.
We're going to.
We will.
So check that out. If you just look up Huffington Post and you Google, and the title is very intentional, right? The title of the piece is "There is no excuse and never an invitation to rape," right? And so also, you know, major trigger warning because there's discussions of sexual violence, but you should be able to find it. So check that out. And we'll be talking more about Sexual Assault Awareness Month, maybe on the Instagram, on the Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Her handle is Oír con Ojos.
Yes.
Shirley from Peace Over Violence. she invited the Mommy Collective to be a part of a guest video, a Denim Day video, where we're talking about sexual assault, sexual violence, and ways to, you know, that it shouldn't happen, like not on my campus, not at my party, you know, really combating it. Unfortunately, not all of the mommies were able to be a part of it, but Maritza and I were.
Yes.
And it was amazing. It was an amazing experience, so shout out to Shirley.
It was at guest headquarters.
It was. Oh, my God. I felt like J-Lo for the day.
Hair and makeup.
Amazing. They put me in a new dress, so believe me when I say that I felt like J-Lo.
I love it.
It was amazing. That is my true calling in life, TBH. So, yeah, we will be posting that at some point. Whenever that's released, we'll post it on the Instagram. Mm-hmm. So, shout out again to Shirley for making that happen.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
cool. Yes. Yeah, so now let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
Yes.
Who do we have on the show?
Our third try. Please. Thank you so much to Queer Chicano Chisme for being so patient, so fucking down. Hey, how are you, love?
I'm good.
Hello?
Hello, yeah.
Yeah, okay. go ahead.
You cut out for us.
He's calling in. Introduce yourself.
I'm calling in. This is our third time trying this. Hi, my name is Ruben, but you probably know Chicano Chisme. I am multi-platform on all social media. I'm on Facebook, where I post articles that inform my politics and inform and experience as like a queer, brown, Chicano femme, right? Then on Instagram, I have a collection of images and memes that, like, are often, like, really personal. So I like, talk about need for identity as, like, a colonized subject of Latin America, but also, like, my depression and things like that. Like, I'm very open about a lot of things on Instagram, but also on Twitter, where I basically, like, map out, like, my life, like, right, my whole life is on Twitter. Like, I try not to like shy away from topics, right? Because one of the reasons why I created my platforms is because I didn't see like a queer, brown, like Chicano femme, like, right, like doing the damn thing, and there was like no roadmap for me, right?
Yeah.
And so I kind of, in some ways, I want to provide like one of what's sure to be many roadmaps for other, like, you know, sissy brown boys, as I call it, right? So that they too can sit alone, and that there's like someone there that like that's like making mistakes and like also like thinking critically about like not only their existence but also like the systems, right, in which they exist.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in our second recording of this, our second try, you talked about the creation of your platform, Queer Chicano Chisme, and actually, you know, the sissy brown boys that you're talking about, and how you included that in your graduation cap. Is that something you feel, like, comfortable talking about now?
Yeah, definitely. So, so writing for Sissy Brown Boys is something that took on, like, way bigger meanings than I originally intended it to, right? So, I graduated on June 12th, 2016.
Congratulations!
Yes, congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a very long journey. And so, if you're familiar with that date, you'll know that it was the same date as, like, the Orlando Pulse tragedy, right?
Right.
And so, that happened on a Sunday morning, right? The tragedy happened, like, at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. in Florida.
Yes.
But a week earlier, I had done the same thing that a lot of us had done, are doing right now, which is decorate our graduation caps, right?
Yeah.
And so, for me, I think I couldn't find who to dedicate it to or what, you know, a lot of people are like thinking their family and their X and Y, right? But as like someone who was disowned and whose family was a hurdle to graduation, right? Mm. As a queer brown person,
right?
I couldn't be like, thank my family for their struggle because that seemed really disingenuous to me.
Yeah.
So instead I dedicated it to other people like me, right? Who may not have had the opportunities or the light, you know, or the guidance to make it to a graduation stage, right? So my cap said, for all the sissy brown boys that couldn't, right?
Oh, and
I wrote a small poem about it. I wrote a small poem that basically said, for all the sissy brown boys that couldn't graduate, because of systemic violence or because they have to stop being sissy brown boys, right? A lot of the time the world forces is to stop being feminine, right?
Right.
Because
right.
we demonize femininity.
Mm-hmm.
So I dedicated to them. Little did I know that, like, it would take on a bigger meaning because, you know, Orlando took so many, like, brown and black folk from
yeah.
us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was, in that number, there was folks that couldn't, right? There was folks whose dreams were cut short.
Yeah.
Right? So I put out my poem, and it went viral on multiple platforms, thanks to folks like Latina Rebels and Chicanisma. And so what happened with that is that I became really available to a lot of people, right? A lot of people had my personal Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I was already like a very popular like activist and like writer, I didn't expect the kind of attention that I got, right? So to put like a barrier between me and other people, because oftentimes people just see you as a resource, right?
Yep.
I created my platforms. Because I saw that there was, like, a need for, like, this voice, right, that I was, like, speaking.
Yeah.
But also, like, I needed self-care. Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you see your platforms and social media as self-care and as venting? Like, is that what it is for you?
Yeah. Oh, my God. My Twitter is, like, super, like, it's like a double-edged sword. Like,
right.
Sometimes when I write something, like, that's, like, politically charged or, like, socially, like, that's like a critique on like
yeah.
anything, like, oh my God, like the trolls will come.
They always
right?
do.
They flock.
They always do.
Oh, yeah, they have a flock, right?
They
and
flock.
It's not, only like, it's not only like bigots, right? It's also like our community, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like, can't take criticism for shit.
Very frustrating.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
upsetting.
Yeah, I'm sure y'all know it. Y'all talk about like some real shit.
Oh, yeah.
Community.
The shit that we get from our own community when we talk about what? Rape culture.
Men being emotional terrorists.
Yes,
they are.
They show up, but in the wrong way.
Yep.
You know, they show up,
but in
a bad
with that
way.
That not all men shit.
Yes,
yes.
It's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I'm like, can you not?
Right. And
yeah.
So, like, a part of it is like really damaging. It's good. It's so good, right?
Yeah.
Like on Twitter, like I found community. I found other femmes. I found a lot of people who like were like. Damn, like, queer chicken or cheese is saying shit that, like, I thought, but I, you know, I thought I was imagining, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I speak certain things, they're like, oh my God, like, they feel less gaslighted, right?
Yes,
yes.
And gaslighting is when you're made to think that your mental state is something that it isn't.
Right, and a form of abuse,
it's
you
a
know,
form of
yes.
abuse.
That we can see, you know. And
yeah.
have experienced
and
most
for,
of us,
for
I think.
People, for folks listening who, you know, the term gaslighting might be a new term. An example of gaslighting is, like, it's an abuse tactic, right? Like, an abusive person might do bad things to you, you
mm-hmm.
know? But then lie and cover it up and tell you that you're making it up or you're, you know, you're imagining it. To make
yep.
you feel as if
you're crazy.
Crazy
making.
Exactly. Crazy making, which is something we've talked about
before. In our first couple of
how the world, our societies, like, gaslight us and abuse us on wide scales and interpersonal scales.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, crazy making.
Mm-hmm.
So when women, femmes, respond in particular ways to trauma,
mm-hmm.
we're labeled as crazy, as if the point of aggression began with our reaction.
Right.
Right? Not
oh.
looking at the causes.
Yes, that reminds me, like, when I had, like, a really big falling out with one of my ex-girlfriends, one of our, at the time, mutual friends, like, reached out to me and
mm-hmm.
was like, you're calling so-and-so abusive. It makes me think that you're going through something really terrible. Like,
abuse is terrible.
yeah, like, you must be going through something that's making you make this up because you're crazy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Example, gaslighting.
So, yeah, so that's
yes.
gaslighting.
Yeah. Wow.
And you know what, Ruben, you know what I love about you, too? Like, earlier you mentioned that, you know, you like to bring up topics and talk about things that other people are not talking about, that we don't like to talk about. And it's true. And you do it in, like, a lot of different ways. It's
mm-hmm.
levels. Because you could talk about, you know, the politics, race, sexuality, but you also want to talk about Selena and the cow print and bring it up.
Yep. People were very upset, Ruben. Myself included.
Can we talk about that, please? Can we talk
myself
about that?
Myself included. Tell us, can you set the scene of the meme for us?
Of the meme.
Please.
Yes, okay, yeah, drag me.
Yes!
Okay, so I made a meme where it was, like, a picture of Selena in her iconic purple fit that she wore in that, you know, one of her last big concerts, right?
At the Astrodome.
The Astrodome, yeah. And then I have it juxtaposed. Picture of Selena and Los Dinos in their cow print outfits, right?
Right.
She was wearing, like, cow print chaps and, like, leather, right? And I posted, like, the text was, like, sometimes I feel like I'm not doing my best work. But then I remembered that for every iconic purple outfit that Selena wore, she also wore a cow.
And oh, my God. How did people respond? Please describe it.
Horribly. Oh, my God. The work got, like, so dragged. People were like, you're offending the culture, Japan. How dare you disrespect this, like, the idol, or, like, you're like, being really offensive, and I'm just like...
They came for you.
They did.
Yeah, and I'm just like, hey, this is a joke. Like, it's called, like, being, like, you know, it's, like, called, like, self-dragging in some ways.
Yes.
I expect that people to come for me, right? Because you can't...
But it's funny, though, because it's, like, there was, you know, because we even, like, the girls, like, the Mommy Collective, I can't lie... We were in our group chat talking about that meme, and we were like, oh my God, that is an iconic Selena look. It's so Tejana. We love the cow print.
We love the cow print. Yes.
Even us, we were like, side eye.
Mm-hmm. We were like, I don't know about this one, Ruben. I do not know.
I love it.
But here's my thing, though. Here's my thing is that, like, I like doing that shit because I like people. I like to, so something that somebody described me as once. Iconoclast, right? I'm someone that, like, pushes, like, not only the boundaries, but also, like, people's idea of idolization, right?
Mm.
So people see Selena, right? And for some reason, we can't touch her. Like,
no,
we can't say anything that's even, like, mildly critical.
No, you cannot.
No.
And so...
She's all we have.
She's all we have. We're very protective of her.
We're very protective.
And I think, I mean, you can't separate the fact that, like, how she left us as to why people are protective of her.
Yeah, and there's been, like, there's, like, so many things that can be said about that,
mm-hmm.
right? But there's also so many things that can be said about, like, the way that we hold on to idols
mm-hmm.
as Latinxes, as Chicanxes, right?
Yeah, we have many of them. We will.
Yeah, we have so many of them.
We will be talking about another idol in the near, at the end, like, towards the end of this capítulo.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about another idol. I don't mean to cut you off, Ruben, but we do have to go into our song break right now.
Our song break, yes. We're just getting started. This
will be a nice little break, and then we're going to really get into the chisme.
Podcasteras peligrosas.
Thank you again, Ruben, for bringing this song for us to play. Now, let's get into, like we were talking about, chisme.
Chisme.
Chisme in all its facets.
Mm-hmm. All its glory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. chisme is really important to me, right? But, like, I also want to establish that I approach chisme, like, from a very, like, decolonized lens, right?
Right.
Like I look at it very differently than most people do, and I want to acknowledge the fact that, like, like, this is, in essence, this is something beyond, like, its Western restrictions and imposed definitions or norms, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I understand that, like a lot of people get, like, really offended by it, right? And, or really, they get really weirded out by, like, the fact that I praise chisme or that I call myself chisme, right? And,
because it has a negative connotation.
It does.
Yeah, it has some connotations that has been brought to it, right?
I mean, a really common phrase that we hear in, like, Latinx houses is, no seas chismoso.
Yeah.
No seas tan chismoso.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. And, like, and I know it's hurt a lot of people, right? Chisme, specifically unethical chisme, which we'll get to later, like, that's hurt people.
Yeah. Right.
Right? And, like, if we're gonna, like, get down to the root of it, like, the etymology, like, that means, like, the root of, like, the word is, like, the Latin word chisma, which means division. But again, like, that wasn't, a word that we and, like, you know, as, like, colonized Latinized, like, Latinx, Latin American subjects, like, called that form of expression, right? It was something that colonizers imposed on us, right? So they saw, like, a practice, right, that we had. And then colonizers imposed a word on that, right? And they saw it as, like, something that was very divided, right? Because that was the only way that they saw things, right? Because not only do we have to remember that a lot of the terms we use are colonized, but also a lot of the ideas, right, that we have, such as gender, right? So, like, binary notions of gender, like, which is, like, a division of the way we look at people, right? That was brought on by colonizers.
Yeah, because if you think about, like, so say, you know, you're a colonizer, right? You see these people and the way that they are transmitting, the way they're preserving their history, their religions, any type of, like, customs that they have, they're doing it through storytelling, through speaking. So creating that type of chisme, that kind of negative connotation is vital to destroying what they have.
Yeah. And I, and this makes me think of course, a great example of this as far as, like, you know, safety planning, sharing information, spreading knowledge, organizing in the midst of oppression, like African Americans and their oral tradition and call and response. And one of the reasons why Black folk on Twitter really dominate Twitter and really utilize it in a way that is more efficient and expressive than any other demographic.
I think Black women invented Twitter, to be honest. They invented the internet.
Right.
That's how I feel.
And so we each different type of colonized subject is going to have their own model, right?
Absolutely.
Of somehow resisting or responding to colonization. And the spread of knowledge and information is vital to that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely, right? And, like, as a brown queer femme, like, I get that, like, again, like, that chisme has its negative connotations, right? Because I've also been hurt by chisme, right? But it's also been, like, really helpful, right? Not only, like, in the way that y'all have brought it up, right? Like, so people get to, like, spread information, right? But also, like, history, right? There's certain things that are not written down anywhere, right? So, like, in its very essence, like, chisme is, like, immaterial, like, truth or immaterial news. Immaterial information.
Because it's information that exists without receipts. And so much of our experiences as Latinx people have to do with living and existing without receipts. So much of being a femme or a woman or a survivor is about having a reality and an experience without evidence, without receipts.
Yeah, literally.
But we have the stories and the narratives, right? It happened, but it's not documented in Eurocentric white ways. It's not, you know, like,
therefore not valid.
Therefore not valid, not believed.
Yes, absolutely. And I think right now is, like, a great time to, like, bring up one of, like, I think our collective heroes, right? Bad Dominicana, who, like, stands in, like, the middle of everything we just mentioned, right? Like, Black, Latinx, woman, femme, right? Like, I think one of the things that's hit me, so many of what she says has hit me really hard, right?
Yeah.
So much. Like, if you don't follow Bad Dominicana on all social platforms, like...
And support her. And pay
support
her.
Buy her work.
Be a patron.
Yes, be a patron. Shop her stuff at... ShopSahiraKelly.com. Like, support, she makes such beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's hit me the hardest that she said is, like, people say that, like, educate yourself with books, right? But, like, as an Afro-Latina, Afro-Latinas didn't exist in books.
Right.
So she's, like, documenting her existence on Twitter and on all her platforms, right?
Yeah. And a lot of us come from families and areas and regions and villages and tribes and communities where maybe a lot of our ancestors did not have birth certificates. Mm. Like, our births' existence were not documented in the same ways, mm-hmm. right? So, like, we could talk about, if we go on Ancestry.com, how far back are they really able to go?
Our grandparents, that's about it. To our grandparents,
yeah. Because I know that my dad's grandparents, they did not have birth certificates, mm-hmm. and they didn't have their own original names, because mm-hmm. whatever, like, you know, basically rancho that mm-hmm. you were working for, mm-hmm. if you were an Indian, an indigenous person, it was not uncommon for you to be given the last name of the rancho. Mm-hmm. So we're Munoz because yes. they were working on that ranch Absolutely. In Chihuahua, right? Mm-hmm. So how far back can we really go when we don't have our real names, right? When we don't have birth certificates and those documents?
Yes, talked with y'all before about how, like, my mother's birthday on record is not, like, actual real birthday.
Right.
This is a perfect example.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so my mother was born in a pueblo where, like, back in the day, right, your, like, Catholicism was such that it imposed certain rules on women where they couldn't register their own children, yeah. right? So the husbands had to do it, or the man in the family had to do it. They have to go and like, claim a child as their own in order for them to be valid, right? In order for them to be, like, have a registry.
Damn. And to have to rely on men for, like,
to do
stage
anything.
One, step one of your life to yeah. register you, like, step one. And to have that be reliant yeah. on a man is so stressful
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, can I just say, like, side real quick, my father fucked up my birth certificate because he was in charge of that. So, yes,
we could have prime a whole example. Episode about fathers and birth certificates mm-hmm. and claiming kids and yeah. not claiming kids yeah. and lying about having kids.
Absolutely.
We
will save that for our next chisme installment. So back to you, Ruben. ¿Qué pasó con tu mami? Tell us.
Sorry, I was taking a sip. Okay, so here's what's up. okay, so, like, my mother was born in July, right? She's a Leo as fuck. but because the rules were such that, like, your dad had to register you, she wasn't registered until late September because my grandfather born. So when she was born, he went, like, on a drinking binge for, like, hella days, right? And when he finally came to, it was already way past that month,
and,
right?
And why was it, can you tell us again, why was it that he was so upset when she was born?
Because she was a girl, not a boy.
He wanted a boy, so he fucked yeah. up her shit because mm-hmm. she was a girl. Yeah.
So on record, what, she's a Virgo?
Excuse me?
So on record, she's a Virgo, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, right? but she's really a Leo.
She's actually a Leo.
Which is what matters, and I think it's why I get along with Leos. So yeah, so she wasn't registered until, like, September.
Wow.
And so I wouldn't know my mom's actual birthday if it wasn't for chisme, right? If it wasn't for oral tradition, right? Because the records of Mexico, which is a nation state, right? You know, which is, like, an ultimate form of a colony, right? Because their records show that my mother was born on a different date.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, my government name, not my performance name, is, you know, Ariana, right? And my tocaya, my abuela, on my dad's side, when she immigrated here in the 90s, when she was, you know, doing her immigration stuff, when the person was that was doing her paperwork heard her name, thought she said Adriana.
Oh.
So there's a D in her name, like, in her documents here. There's a D, so she's not even, like, by her right name. And she was so afraid to correct him
Aww.
That she's, like, so here she was living as Adriana and not Ariana.
Right.
You know?
Right.
My tocaya, shout out, my abuelita, que descanse en paz. But, yeah, you know, like... And I wouldn't have known that had my family not told me.
Yeah. And my dad's family, mm-hmm. my dad's side of the family, my dad's grandfather, so my great-grandfather, and their Yaqui and Tarahumara Indians mm-hmm. are from Chihuahua. And it was kind of a running joke in the family, and my dad would joke that every year they would have a birthday party for grandpa, for great grandpa. Mm-hmm. But he was like, yeah, well, we don't really know how old he is. He's had his 98th birthday 5 times.
Oh my God.
You know, we just are guessing at how old he is. And it's that kind of thing that it's like, you want us, or we should as people be able to have all this knowledge about ourselves. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we don't even know how old we are.
Oh my God. Yes.
Like,
that's so
basic
real.
Shit, you know?
That's
but
so
because
real.
Of structures and history mm-hmm. and oppression and mm-hmm. colonization, all of it.
Yes, because again, like our parents, a lot of the times, like when they come to the U.S. or they, you know, where they immigrate, they like, homie, like my mother didn't carry her paper, like her documentation across the border, right?
Right.
Like, and a lot of our parents didn't.
Yeah.
Right. So, like your tocaya Ariana, like she couldn't bring like her documentation and be like, oh, my name is actually Ariana, right?
Right.
Because yeah.
She probably didn't have it, and if she did have it, like, it would probably put her in danger.
Yeah, there was a power dynamic, evidently.
Yes.
You know, she Clearly. Was afraid that this person wasn't going to let her enter the U.S. because she corrected him.
Right.
Because he, like, didn't understand her name. You know, my little, like, 411 abuelita,
Aww.
You know.
Aww.
Yeah, yeah, from Trujillo, Peru. Shout out anyone if you're listening. From Trujillo. Yeah. But yeah, like, going back, like, I wouldn't have known that had my family not told me.
Chisme.
Chisme.
TBH, right? And, like, chisme can be, like, not only, like, a form of, like, documentation, but, like, also, like, a form of preservation,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
In so many ways, right? One of the first, like, again, like, as a brown femme, of course I've been, like, hurt by chisme, right? Like, even though I'm someone who can't hide their identity, right? Like, I am very... I mean, y'all see me move. Like, I move however the fuck I want to move, right?
Yes,
like,
it is wonderful. Art.
Yeah.
Magical.
And I occupy a very femme space, right,
mm-hmm.
that will never pass as what people think of as, like, a man, quote-unquote,
uh-huh.
right? And so, chisme has been used to, like, hurt me, right? Because people have all these these negative implications of queerness, right? And
yeah.
femininity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was in college when I found ways in which chisme... was like with my close group of friends that they outlined it to me and brought it to light as something positive, right? Because when we go into these predominantly white spaces, right, we often don't have a safety net
mm-hmm.
or anything, right, unless we connect with other people of color,
yeah.
black, indigenous people of color,
yeah,
right,
yeah. Oh my god, there's just in what you just said, there's so much to unpack and
yeah.
to talk about.
We
it's
should,
fucking wild.
We
like,
should do like a future like as a queer or femme or brown person studying at the university,
mm-hmm.
like
yes.
what you have to do to survive.
Mm-hmm.
That could be really great for our younger listeners.
Oh, yeah.
That are listening,
yeah.
or folks that are
school,
like our non-traditional students that may be like pursuing something in the future.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, we've talked about this about being this part one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. So bookmark
there
this idea.
More.
There's a lot of ideas.
But
we
you
got.
Know, you know what I love. Because the chisme, when it happens, it's a moment. There's nothing I love more than... Because you can tell when the chisme is about to happen. There's nothing I love more than when my mother comes to me in a hushed whisper and
yeah.
listen.
Yeah. Yeah,
listen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When your mommy
Don't
walks
tell your father
in.
I told you this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know...
Oh, yeah.
I'm ready for it. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Oh,
let me
yes.
grab a seat.
Yes.
Let me pour a glass of wine. I'm ready.
You
What's
know,
about to happen?
Yeah, you know what? Let me paint a picture for y'all. Because I feel like my... Between my mother and I, our chisme sesh, like, is while I'm at my vanity.
Ah.
And I'm getting ready for work. So she comes in and she's like, Diosa. AKA Ariana.
Let's have a word.
And then she starts telling me.
Did you just refer to yourself as a third person?
Yes, I did, bitch. Yes, I did.
Once in a while.
Once
sometimes.
In a while. Sometimes. Anyway, so that is my, like, that is when we have our little cheese mess session. She's like, you know what your papi did? You know what he did? You know what I heard? And I'm like, tell me. Tell
right,
me.
Right. Exactly. It's a moment. And
it
it's
is.
Like, when it's about to happen, there's, like, signals.
There are.
Yes.
And it's so exciting.
There's signals to cheese me, right?
Yes.
And there's all, yes. Oh, my God. There's signals to cheese me. Because, like, girl, like, ugh. And here's what this is where, like, a big thing comes, right, there's a difference between, like, chisme, and again, we're going to talk about, like, being a metiche, right? Like,
yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's get into it now.
So, like, there's a difference when somebody's coming to you with some, like, juicy chisme that you know is going to be, like, it's going to be good,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's some times when chisme is bad, and that's when somebody's being a metiche.
Yes.
Right? So metiche is someone who, like, se mete en lo que no le importa, right? Mm-hmm. Like, things that don't matter to them, right?
Right.
So my chisme thread on Twitter gets passed, like, it gets retweeted a lot. Something that's one of my most, my tweet is the most longevity, right? I tweeted it, I formed it in, like, October, and to the day, I still get comments on it.
That's
right?
The thread that made me fall in love with you.
Same.
It snatched me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah, so, like, that often gets really positive, like, feedback.
Yeah.
Or it gets completely stolen by somebody else, whatever. Mm. Or it gets really bad, like, feedback, right? I've had people bash stuff, try to come for me, right, mm-hmm. for it, right? And it's like, things such as, like, people are like, oh, remember that, like, F-word? F-word who tried to politicize chisme, or remember that?
And let's be clear, these are fellow Latinx community members,
no, these are
right?
probably Latino men.
These
let's
are Latino
be real.
Males.
Not Latinx folks, Latinos. Yes?
Well, it's actually
Siono.
A combination of, like, okay, so a lot of, so, yeah, the majority of them are Latinos.
Right.
But sometimes I get, like, Latinx is coming for me, too, right?
Interesting.
A lot of people, right? And so people confuse being a chismoso, chismosa, chismosex,
uh-huh.
which being a metiche, right?
That makes sense.
And
that makes
so
sense.
Being a chismoso with a chismosex with one another requires a certain level of trust.
Yes,
right?
Because we can talk about the fact that when you share chisme, you have particular people that you share it with. It's not everybody.
No.
You know who you can trust and you know who you can talk to and who you can't. There's logic behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's a shit that people miss. It's like fucking nuance.
Mm-hmm. Nuance. It's very
so
important.
Yes.
But yeah, something I even have written in my bio, right, is like nuance. It's so
mm-hmm.
important. Right? Not all chisme is good.
No.
Yeah. But who's the biggest metiche that we know of?
Who's the metiche that you know of?
The biggest metiche.
Who's the biggest metiche?
The federal government.
Okay, so, people say that, like, chisme isn't political, right? But, like, chisme is hella political, right?
Yes, so
and the way
political.
That we look at it, too, right? So, when we think about, like, unethical chisme,
mm-hmm.
right? When we think about metiches,
right.
we must think about the government, right?
Always.
Yeah.
They're metiche as fuck, right? The
yes.
NSA and shit, they're looking at our records, like, looking at shit que no les importa, it doesn't matter.
Listening in on our conversations.
Probably
yes.
listening right now, TBH.
Listening right the fuck now.
Yeah.
What up, NSA? What's up,
NSA? What's good?
right? And so because all these things get recorded, right, chisme has been used in very political ways,
mm-hmm.
too, right? So, like, when we think about, like, Nixon and
mm-hmm.
Deep Throw, right? If you're not
Cointelpro.
Familiar with that, so, basically, Deep Throw was, like, someone who was, you know, inside of Nixon's administration, right, who spilled, like, the chisme, who spilled the tea on that Nixon was doing, right, in order to bring down the U.S. government, right?
Listen, whoever slipped over those Trump tax returns,
mm-hmm.
that was classic. That's the same as sending a screenshot, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So, like, in these ways, like, chisme is very political, right? WikiLeaks, so
mm-hmm.
fucking...
Chisme.
That's political chisme.
Yes,
right?
political chisme, absolutely.
And I have, like, a whole fucking essay I can write about, like, the way that WikiLeaks came around and who was ultimately persecuted, right? Because who was persecuted for that shit?
Oh, the...
Chelsea Manning.
Yes,
right?
The transgender woman
right?
mm-hmm.
who ended up being put in a men's prison because of the
yes.
WikiLeaks fallout. And where is Snowden?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the man, Edward Snowden, did not reap the bad repercussions
no.
of chisme.
No.
Right?
No, it really is very incredible. And we can point out the fact that when the United States government
engages in metiche or chismoso shit, it's labeled literally as intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
It's literally called intelligence, bitch. Intelligence.
Yes, and that comes down to, like, how chisme is gendered.
Yes, right? Yes, because the power dynamics. Yes.
But let a mujer, let a femme, let a bitch engage in some gossip, then it's chismosa. Frivolous. The chismosa, it's frivolous.
Yeah,
it's not intelligence anymore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, right? Sorry, I just saw that we were all talking over each other. I remember this joke about, like, how podcasts are often, like, millennials talking over each other.
Oh, my God, I love it. No, you know what? It'd be like that sometimes when the cheese is that good. Yeah. Y'all are talking over each other.
Yeah, truly.
Yes, but there's this thing about, like, talking over each other, even when you're chismeando, mm-hmm. that you can... That we're still listening to each other.
Yes! Are. Also, I feel like this is a very Latin American thing, because... In the U.S., like, when you speak English, like, you, it's like a wait and response, right? No. In Latin America, you are all having, like, five different conversations at the same table.
Which you can follow.
And everyone's listening.
Yes.
Chismoso.
You know what?
Chismoso, you know
what?
101.
You know when I noticed that white people really do speak differently and have a whole different speaking structure mm-hmm. than Latinos, than we do?
When I was in, the white man.
The what?
I said, when you fucked a white man.
Well, no, not then. That's not when it happened. A different time.
Another time.
A different time. So, no, like, okay. I went to a predominantly Latino and Filipino elementary and middle school. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to high school, I went to a predominantly white high school. And I noticed right away that, the way people dressed was mm-hmm. extremely different.
Yeah.
I was like, why is everyone barefoot, basically, like,
I don't
at
understand.
School?
That was me when I went to UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah, I was like, how come no one wears clothes at school? Like, it was strange. It was different for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, they don't do their hair. They don't put makeup on.
Oh,
not that
they don't even wear shoes.
Okay. Yes, they don't wear shoes. Go ahead, Ruben.
Yeah, that's the same shit when I went to UC Davis, right? Mm-hmm. It was all these, like, you know, these, like, socio white people who,
literally.
Who, like, try to pretend they were poor, but they were hella rich.
Hella rich,
right?
Yep. So,
but, like, the thing about, like, whiteness is that, like, people don't judge you on the way you look as much as they judge you when you're a black and indigenous.
Yep.
Or femininity.
Or femininity.
Why women uphold femininity.
Yeah.
And so, not only did I notice that, expression in general was different for white people. And I noticed this when I was 14, right? And I went to this white high school. So, expression in general is different for white people. So, not only how they dress and the way that they carry themselves, but the way that they speak, right? And I noticed in high school and when I went to college and I joined the Senate, that there was this emphasis on rules and regulations when it came to discussion and debate.
Mm.
Like this Lincoln Douglas style debate, and where there's rules and like convention. And when one person speaks, other people cannot chime in, no matter what that person is saying.
Mm.
Right?
Yes. Oh my God.
The
form
matters more than the content.
Yeah. That
with whiteness.
That goes with that whole like, well, everybody's entitled to an opinion.
Right.
Even if it's hateful, even if it's demeaning to people of color.
Yes.
Queer folks.
Yes.
And then, like, rebuttals,
so
even
important.
rebuttals are, like, regulated. So you can only respond a certain number of times and if you adhere to certain protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposed to be in government, like, debate settings. It was so strange to me. And I could not do student government for more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a lot to do with the restrictions on the way that we spoke.
Right.
I couldn't stand it because I had to sit and wait for all these dumbass, like, fucking, oh my God, just so, so out of touch, just so tone deaf, just so in every way ignorant, like, all these people, like, saying all this horrible shit, and you're literally not allowed to respond, you know?
Yes, okay.
Okay,
so I brought up, like, fucking white man, because that's how I came into, like, how white people communicate, and it's just, like, it's very much, like, not like this, right?
Yeah,
like,
no.
They have, like, they, no matter what the fuck the other one is saying, like, they're not accustomed to shutting people down.
The clapback is not strong. They don't do it.
It's like there's this essay that I read in college, but it's like about like the language of whiteness and how like everybody's polite and everybody's saying something without saying anything.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then here we come. Yeah, here we come.
Yeah, which brings us back to like how people say like you sound white or whatever, right? They mean you sound like quote unquote polite, right?
Yes.
Well, we aren't necessarily polite, right? We just learn to like navigate white spaces.
Exactly.
The code switching. The code switching has to happen.
And it's so layered for folks. I feel like U.S. Latino folks, Latinx folks, Chicanos, Chicanexes, because not only do we navigate, like, code switching in, like, the class sense, but also, like, language-wise, like, Spanglish-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. It really is.
Yeah. So that brings me to, like, existing in, like, one of the biggest predominantly white spaces in college, right? Like, you...
Yeah.
You don't... Like, there's, Ruben, like, centers.
Wait, right? The last sentence, can you repeat it? Because you cut out a little bit.
Yeah, so college, a lot of the time, you don't know where actual spaces are, right?
Yes.
Right? Like, there's, like, Latinx centers, but oftentimes they're not actually safe.
Right.
And there's, like, a Latinx Chicanx study department, but it's not necessarily safe.
Oh, my God.
So we can talk about chisme and survivors.
Yes, okay.
And community and safety planning and disposability and accountability. Oh.
This is such a good transition, like, talking about the university and, like, Chicano, Chicanx, Latino, Latinx spaces. And how they're supposedly safe, but really, a lot of these men in our in the fucking departments are predators. Predators. And abusers.
And our communities protect them.
Have multiple rape allegations against them from students.
Oh my God.
But they're on their tenure.
Right.
You know, they've done so much. They give so much funding comes to the department because of them. So let's not touch them. Let's protect them as opposed to these vulnerable students.
Right.
So, but how do we learn to not take their classes? Through chisme, right?
Chisme,
through a down-ass TA, through a grad student.
Right.
Somebody else, an older student that, like, took them and is like...
says, watch out.
Don't be careful.
Yeah.
Don't take this class. Don't be alone with this person.
Or don't mess with this activist.
Yeah. Or don't mess with this activist. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, as someone who's a survivor, someone in, like, who, like, activist, right? Like, coming out about, like, my rapist, like, is not gonna, it has historically not led to survivors being believed or to rapists being persecuted, right?
As we know, in the United States.
As we know, it's not, like, just a projection, it's, like, as we know.
Yeah, as we know, it's statistical, it's factual, and this is information, and this is why it pisses me off when, like, Latino men, like, when men of color come at us with this very Eurocentric demand of show me evidence.
They want the science.
They want the science.
The math.
Well, the thing is, and it's funny though, because when it comes to violence against women and femmes, the information is out there. Even the Department of Justice collects this information. The city, state, and federal level, like, we know that the number one threat to women and femmes, to our safeties and our livelihoods, are men.
The men in our lives.
That's what we know. You know, you could literally go on the DOJ website and see it plainly written out. And it's been acknowledged and this information has been collected for years, but there's still this cognitive dissonance and like unwillingness to acknowledge, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And like accountability, like what accountability, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't exist specifically in activist spaces, right? Because who do we gather to protect? Like, we don't gather to protect women and femmes or queer and trans people of color.
No.
Like, we gather to protect men.
Yeah.
Right?
And
specifically cishet men, but not limited to cishet men.
No.
It's anyone who fits the ideal of manhood.
Right. Masculinity. And so that leads us to a discussion of disposability, which we begin to notice and we begin to see, at least, you know, I do because of the work that I do with rape crisis and working with survivors. We begin to see this ongoing trend of we bring up this idea that people are not disposable, but we bring up this idea generally when it comes to protecting a known abuser or a known perpetrator's position in the community.
Mm-hmm.
We only talk about disposability when we're trying to keep abusers exactly where they're at and not changing their access or their position or their power. I have never in an activist space, in a Latinx, in a brown black space, heard anybody say, because women and children and survivors are not disposable, we will take disclosure seriously and we will take safety for women and children and femmes and survivors seriously. So we will separate you know, perpetrators from community for at least a time, or we will take steps. Mm-hmm. I've never heard that. I have only heard people aren't disposable, so such and such outed abuser should be allowed to have all of the space at the art exhibitions, at the talks, at the conferences, at the performances. We're not going to change anything about their access to the community based on what we know about them, you know?
Who gives a fuck about the survivors?
Who gives a fuck about the survivors?
And this is why, like, chisme comes into play, right? Because we know the system ain't here for us, right? Mm-hmm. We know no one's going to protect us, specifically as survivors. So how do we protect one another? We spread that ethical chisme, right?
Yeah.
We protect. We're like, hey, homie, don't hang out with this person. Don't like, this is what happened. We don't just say it to everybody. We say it to people who we trust and who we want to protect, right? Because a part of ethical treatment is knowing power dynamics.
Yes.
Right.
Because who are you protecting and who are you exposing, right? If the chisme is ethical and with the intention to protect and inform, then you would not be exposing or outing a vulnerable individual. You would be exposing and outing power and a hierarchy and an imbalance and violence, right?
Absolutely. So someone recently, like I mentioned earlier, my chisme thread is like constantly like circulating, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somebody recently came to me with like some shit about like, well, fuck you. Chisme is what had my whole pueblo demonize my mother for remarry, right? And I'm just like, no, homie, that's like being a metiche, and that's spreading unethical chisme, because in our culture, right, women who remarry or get divorced, or women who do anything outside of the norm, get demonized, right? So her pueblo was being hella metiches.
Yeah.
What the fuck do they care that somebody's parent got remarried, right?
I feel like that goes back to not actually chisme, but actually protecting masculinity. Because...
Mm. Oh, yes.
Because who is she, like, wronging by remarrying?
Exactly.
The man, the former partner.
The first husband.
The first husband and his family.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Because men are never freaking like demonized.
And because if we're thinking about if this was a woman in Latin America, right? And who knows what decade, what year, right? What other economic options did she have for survival besides marriage?
Oh my God,
would she want to demonize the fact that she got remarried so she can eat and have a place to live?
Mm-hmm.
So she's wrong because the circumstances force that type of interaction, that's victim blaming.
Yeah.
Oh my God, fuck yes. So this brings me back to like something that like Sandra Cisneros wrote one time, and I'm just like, it's not verbatim, but she was basically like how in Latinx, Chicanx cultures, like women and queer and trans folks are united by the fact that they're off women, specifically women who are open about their sexuality, are demonized in ways that parallel queer and trans folks, right? Like we all get kicked out of our house, right?
Like
because we decided to be open about you know, our desires or who we are.
Who we are,
right?
Yeah, and you know, something that we talked about in the second recording of this same capítulo.
This trilogy.
Is the importance of chosen family. And for queer folks, especially, like, chosen family, like, is extremely important. It's extremely vital to our survival as queer folks, trans folks, femmes. You know, like, I shared about how my brothers want to give me shit because they're like, you're always with your friends. You never come and see us, you know. But these straight men will never understand the importance of being seen by queer folks, you know, by your chosen family. So... you know, the fact that we're able to, we have to create these separate families because our blood relatives, our blood family, like, they don't see us. They don't respect us. They don't love us.
The institution of the nuclear family is designed to affirm the cishet man.
Exactly.
So he is affirmed in that traditional model of family.
Absolutely.
But only he is affirmed.
Only him. Yes. That's a whole you know, family's family. Yeah. You gotta forgive each other. No, actually, your family could be the most toxic.
The most harmful.
The most toxic
element.
Thing that you ever encounter, experience, have to survive.
Yes.
Absolutely, right? So, like, not only do we build these other families, but oftentimes we build entire languages separate from our family. I'm thinking specifically of queer and trans people of color, right?
Yes.
And the ball scene, right? And we developed like shade and reading, right? And all these types of things that like cishet populations wouldn't understand, right?
Yeah.
Specifically for me, right? When I was a little queer brown kid, and I was looking for ways to survive, like my oppressive, like not only like my family situation, but like my community, I found outlets, right? And I found them through chisme, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't promote, like, come over here, like closeted kid, right?
Right.
It's a safe space, right? Because then people would know about it.
Yeah.
And then people who are trying to hurt queer trans people of color would come and infiltrate it, right? So you have to be like, you have to be a chismoso, a chismosex about it.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's for our safety, right? So chisme oftentimes is used to protect queer and trans people. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is a good transition into the song that you brought today, right? Because there's like the language of it, you know?
Yeah.
That I think we can tie into what you just said.
Yeah, so this is, I guess, we're exiting. So I just, before I go into the song, I want to bring up, like, again, follow me on Twitter,
yes.
IG, Facebook as Queer Chicano Chisme. If you have a store or art to sell, use the hashtag QXCIG, and I'll find you, and I'll promote your art on my platforms
yes.
and your shop. If you are reading America Chavez, which is a comic book mm-hmm. by a queer Latina writer, Gaby Rivera, for Marvel, use the hashtag MakeMineChavez, and I'll also promote you on my platform.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like we should promote queer and trans people of color who are doing the damn thing. Right?
I have a question about that, because I would like to read this comic book, but where does one buy it? Where does one buy this
where
comic
do we find
book?
It? Yeah.
You can buy it online or at your local comic book shop.
Okay. I will look.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a whole other, I can talk about like comic book shops and how they were safety for like a little queer fam.
I love it. Part
yeah,
two.
But,
part two.
There's a comic book shop. I know in Southeast LA, which you, where y'all preside, the nearest one I think is in Bell Gardens,
oh.
which is because I grew up in Southeast LA, so
yes,
like
for sure. Send me that info separate from
yeah.
this. and we'll
Metropolis
talk about that.
Comics. It was owned by a queer woman back in the day.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was definitely my sanctuary. But again, if you're reading America, use the hashtag MakeMineChavez. Let's support queer and trans people of color, like in mainstream media.
Yes. And you have a song,
yeah.
another song for us.
Yeah, so
yes.
we're about
okay.
to get into
so
that.
Getting
so,
into Juanga.
Yeah, we don't have to play the song right away. We
yeah.
can have a discussion about
let's
Juanga.
Let's talk.
It's important. He is very, very important to our communities.
And I feel like the discussion about code switching and new languages, right, is really important when discussing Juanga in this upcoming song.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's so much to unpack with Juanga. I consider him the patron saint of Sissy Brown boys, right?
Love.
Because honestly, growing up, like, he's all I had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did not have anyone else tell me that I can grow into an old age as, like, someone who is not only queer, but also, like, sissy, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm not masculine in any, like stretch of the imagination, right? So, when he passed away, there was a lot of talk about how he's not really queer, right? And that's because Juanga existed in this like intersection of chisme and queerness,
yeah,
right? He was never like openly out about it, right? You had to decipher what he was saying, what he was thinking about, and how he existed in this world,
mm-hmm.
right? So one of like the biggest like things people cite when speaking of Juanga's sexuality and gender was his quote, like, lo que se ve no se pregunta,
right?
Right? It, you know, isn't questioned,
yeah.
right? And he was, and that was basically him asking, not only, it was like there was a dissonance, right? It wasn't only him asking people to stop chisme, it was also asking people to assume things about him.
Yes.
Right?
It was an invitation in some ways, as well as a response.
Yes, absolutely, right? So when he, you know, when he passed away, there was a lot of people, I wrote like another one of my popular threads on Juanga, right? When we had to experience double trauma as queer brown folks, queer Latinxes, queer Afro-Latinxes, queer black folks, right? As not only where, like, when Pulse happened, people were reporting on it as, like, this was an LGBT tragedy, or this was a Latinx tragedy. No, like, very few outlets initially were reporting on it as both.
As intersectional, right?
So when Juanga passed away, it was the same thing. And so, again, LGBT Latinxes, Afro-Latinxes, we had to, like, fight to, like, be like, no, this is important to us. Right? And that was, again, because, like, Juanga never cemented his identity as queer. Because he wanted to exist as a legend, as something. And like, one of the things that we forget is that legends are chisme.
Right? Oh, my God. Legend. So true.
New component.
Right? New legends, component.
Totally new component. Yes. Wow.
Legends exist because we pass them out verbally, right? Despite, like, you can read a whole fucking Wikipedia article on Juanga, but it don't mean shit if you don't have, like, a whole-ass background and somebody pushing your significance to you, right?
And it is really interesting that like, a lot of, you know, Latinxes, Mexicanos, Chicanos, Chicanxes wanted to have a sort of ownership over him by denying that he was queer.
Yeah, which, you know, what we talked about in the last capítulo, or no, in this capítulo, but the last recording is like, it's still just another way for folks to claim, to want to own, to want to dictate ownership, possess a femme body.
Yes.
You know, he was a very femme queer person, you know, and the fact that even
it's
after
abusive,
his death,
it's controlling.
Even after his death, they want to own him, right? These men. I mean, you said in particular that there were folks in your mentions being like, no, stop it. Like, he was not gay, right?
Yes. Because if he's not queer, if he's not femme, then all those tears, those cishet men cry to his songs will be validated. Because everybody cried to Juanga.
Everybody.
But yeah, so getting into the song, it's El Noa Noa by Juan Gabriel. And in it, he says, vamos al lugar de ambiente, right? And the term de ambiente, which was used by a lot of gay men in the 90s specifically, to signify that somebody was queer or gay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a ambiente, right? I said, like, that guy's down, right?
Yeah.
Which means that guy was queer, right? And if we want to look at Juanga as specifically, like, as a queer subject, right? We can look at his lyrics, right? People are often like, well, he often sang to feminine pronouns, right? To querida, right? To ella. Right? But when we look at the language that, like, people, Latinxes, queer Latinxes use, specifically gay, queer men, right? We often use, like, feminine pronouns, right? Like, ella, for other queer men, right? Or other femmes, right? So, ultimately, we can, if we take that lens to Juanga's music, we can see that he was, like, doing, like, the ultimate, like, femme for femme, like, you know, manifesto, right? His music was that, right? He was singing and crying and proclaiming his love to other femmes. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things in this world, really. And that's why, like, he's, like, so important to me.
And you know what's interesting is it seems like, you know, celebrities, people in the public eye, unethical or negative chisme, like, gets spilled about them all the time, right? Like, celebrities get their most intimate stuff exposed quite often. And it often has a lot to do with, like, who they hang out with. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Juanga did not have that type of experience with lots of negative receipts and negative chisme, and people were not trying to expose him. He was sharing his chisme with trusted people.
Yeah.
Who did not expose him. Yeah.
Right, and even his, you know, late wife, his partner that he was married to, that he had children with, like, I'm sure she knew everything, but did she, like, say any of the, you know, did she spill any of the tea? Like,
the frijoles. Did she spill the frijoles?
No, she did not. You know, she was like, we were friends. He was my, you know, my husband. We had these partner, children. My right. partner. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think what Mala says is true. Like, no. He knew who he was spilling or who he was telling the cheese meant to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Honga.
Yeah, shout out. He's from Ciudad Juarez, which is where my mom is from.
Right.
Yeah, and in the last, the second recording of this, I shared how she went to one of his concerts in, I want to say, the late 90s, early 2000s, and she saw him walking up on stage and, like, yelled at him and was like, Juanga, yo también soy de Juárez, and he blew her a kiss.
I love that story.
Yeah, and she was in mourning for a very long time, you know, probably still is. But, yeah, he means so much to our communities on multiple levels. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's play the song.
Yay.
And thank you for bearing with us and for being so patient. And Ruben, thank you so much for recording with us 3 times.
Yes.
And no for, problem. You know, y'all just being like a trooper.
Yeah, thank you so much for being patient with us, for being willing to record with us. And the next time you're here in LA, we will have to do our
brunch.
And then our second installment, también, and yes. then brunch. Some bottomless.
Yes.
Yes.
For nobody.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, anyways, yeah. So here's Juanca.
Yeah, thank you so much for tuning in to another capítulo of Locatora Radio, for tuning into Brown Girl Hour. We will catch you next time.
Besitos.
There are a lot of things that matter to me. Family, community, culture, and peace of mind. Hi, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and when balancing life, I have to say nothing brings more comfort than having support. And when it comes to ensuring those things that matter to you the most, State Farm offers the support with an agent available in person or on the phone to discuss your coverage options. Support when you need it, however you choose. That's State Farm's way. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.